Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When I hear the word hobo, not that I hear that word a lot, but when I do, I think of a grizzled, unkempt guy with his belongings in a bag, sleeping in a boxcar on a train heading across some generic Midwestern state. Oh, and it's 1935. Sound about right to you? Well, now we're going to have to revise our image of the hobo, because today's live music comes from a young woman from the Bronx who spent a couple of years riding the rails.
You definitely feel like you are outside of society, for sure. You're not very in touch with the average day of the average working person, I guess. When I was doing that, I didn't have a phone, and I wasn't really, like, tapped into our, like, technological age, you know?
That's Alinda Lee Segarra, singer and songwriter who fronts the country folk band called Hooray for the Riff Raff. She'll tell us about traveling and finally settling down in New Orleans, and we'll hear some live songs. Also, a Pick 3 playlist from my colleague Mark Wheat. He's on the air at our Minneapolis sister station, The Current. But first, the Olympics are coming up in a few weeks, and the world's gaze will move to Sochi, Russia. The home team is expected to do well, by which I mean President Putin expects them to do well, so they damn well better. And really, if you were a member of the Russian national hockey team, how could you fail to be inspired when you hear a song like this? Shaibu Shaibu means puck, puck, and it is supposed to help fire the Russian team to a gold medal. It's by Irina Allegrova, getting some help from some famous Russian hockey players. Check out the video on our website, soundcheck.org. But when it comes to what's really happening on the Russian music scene, there's a whole lot more to talk about than an aging pop star singing about hockey pucks. Joining me now from UCLA is Professor David McFadyen. He's editor of the music site Far From Moscow. Hi, David.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Sochi, where the Olympics are going to be, that is pretty far from Moscow, isn't it?
If you head south, it is. It's down on the Black Sea, and it's probably fair to say that it's the most famous holiday resort in Russia. So plenty of palm trees.
What about a music scene? Do they have one?
The region as a whole does. It's not a very big city. It's only about 300,000 people. So the one music scene it does have is really seasonal. A lot of the big stars from Moscow, when people take their vacation and head south, then the music follows. So a lot of the big stars will play there in the summer. But when it comes to the younger generation, it's pretty much online.
Right. Now, David, you've been writing about this young DJ, Isholm, for a while. Who is she? Tell us a bit about her.
She's a young woman from the south of Russia, a young techno producer and DJ, and she represents what is going on in that part of the world. Sochi's not very big, like I said, but it's part of the Krasnodar region, and Krasnodar is a very large southern city, and she's a very good representative of what's going on in terms of web-based music. She's working more and more out of Moscow, but in terms of the way that the web helps young Russian musicians get around the problems of geography, she's a really good example.
Yeah, and we can talk about the specific and very unusual problems that Russian geography presents in just a moment. But here, from her debut album, Confessions, is the artist Isholm. Thank you. Kentaver. It's from Isholm, a Russian DJ. Her real name is Mirabella Kirianova. And that's from her album Confessions. You can watch a video of Isholm on our website, soundcheck.org. We're looking at Russian music in advance of the Sochi Olympics, which begin on February 7th, with David McFadyen, editor of the music website Far From Moscow and professor of musicology at UCLA. You were talking about geography a moment ago, David. I mean, here in the States, if we talk about, say, an East Coast-West Coast rivalry in hip-hop, we're talking about two groups of people separated by, you know, 3,000 miles, four time zones. In Russia, people in Vladivostok are like, what, 10 time zones away from the folks in Kaliningrad, something like that?
Yeah, generally speaking, if you watch breakfast TV in Moscow, then people on the other side of the country have already finished and gone home.
So, I mean, it's almost literally half a world long, the country. How does that impact the Russian music scene?
Very much so. Physically, you can imagine that it just means that a lot of people will never be able to move from one side of the country to another. They can't consider playing on the other side of the country because it makes no financial sense.
Yeah.
But what that does do, on the flip side, it creates an incredibly vibrant online scene, in particular because of piracy, ironically. Russian, according to Russian law, social networks have no legal responsibility for what they host. So Russia's equivalent of Facebook is an incredibly rich location of people swapping audio and video files, both legally and illegally.
We're speaking with David McFadyen, editor of the music site Far From Moscow, about the Russian music scene in advance of the Sochi Olympics. In advance of the Olympics, President Vladimir Putin first banned all public protests. Now he's relaxed that a little bit. He's allowing some with advance approval. And, you know, when we think of protest music in Russia, most of us will think of Pussy Riot, who are actually more of a performing art group than a band, right?
Yeah, there's two reasons to say that they're not a band. One is that, just exactly as you said, they're part of a performance art group and had been for quite a while before they started making anything resembling music. And the other reason is that some of the women have said publicly that the band doesn't have any members, that anybody is free to perform our tracks, small that they are in number. And the fact that everybody's faces are hidden also allows anybody potentially to put on the same costume and perform in the same role. So it's not a band in the traditional sense at all.
Right. But there are some bands that are making, you know, somewhat politically intended songs. Tell us about this hardcore band called Marta Prell.
They're a good example of what music means online in Russia, in the sense that if we're talking about protest music, everything is dictated by where it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're operating online, pretty much anything goes. The government has long been of the opinion that no one's really going to pay much attention. So if we're talking about degrees of censorship, they're relatively low online. So you can scream and shout and break things and cause general damage online. If you move into newspapers, the restrictions are greater, and then if you move on to TV, it's a totally different universe.
Is that what got Pussy Riot in trouble, was they moved out of the virtual world and into like the real world?
The fact that it caught the attention of national media elsewhere.
Yeah.
So it became less of a web-based phenomenon and a sort of a televisual phenomenon, and that was too many people seeing it in too many places.
So Marta Prell, they're keeping a low profile, at least physically?
It's not. I'm sure they would rather have more people listening to what they do, but they're a good example of the fact that if you've reached the opinion that many people are not going to hear you, then that gives you a lot of creative opportunity. But lyrically, you can say pretty much whatever you want to. So it depends on how you look at it. There's a very positive viewpoint in the sense that anything's possible, but it might be a result of people being pretty fatalistic about where they're stuck.
Let's hear this band. They're called Marta Prell, from an album called Versus Songs. This is Death Versus Death. Oh! The hardcore band Marta Prell, Death Versus Death, from their album Versus Songs. David McFadyen of the music website Far From Moscow and musicology professor at UCLA with us on Soundcheck talking about the music scene, or scenes, plural, in Russia. How explicit a political statement can a band like that make online and still not incur the wrath of Putin?
Oh, pretty much anything's possible. All you have to do is just check out some of the social networks and see how many people hang around these bands. And very often it's just friends, boyfriends, girlfriends, and a couple of neighbors. Mm. I mean, if we're talking about music and the long tail, to use that well-known economic term, this is the far, far end. So it goes beyond even or below a regional scene. It's very much sort of amateur music in all senses of the word. So I think bands won't encounter any type of problem until they take explicit protest music into a very social venue. So let's say they went to a local hall, they booked a local hall, and maybe some of the guys working in security, but maybe some of the lighting crew, just somebody of a different generation, saw the band and felt it was troublesome. Then you can imagine that maybe getting out to the local police, and then the band finding it harder and harder to book a venue. Mm-hmm. But if you stay online, pretty much anything goes.
All right, but now once you get into the pop charts, then I think you're probably, well, not that this is specific to Russia. I think you could say this about most places around the world. If you're at the top of the pop charts, it's going to be something that's not going to have a lot of rough edges.
Not at all. Here again, piracy is really important. If even the major artists in Russia, the most mainstream, middle-of-the-road, middle-aged artists, also realize that there's no point selling music because 20 minutes after you start selling it, somebody rips a copy and puts it online. They have to tour as well. So it's generally accepted that all the mainstream artists you see on TV have paid in some way or another to get their face on programs, on the game shows on TV, because that helps them sell concert tickets. So the more frequently their face is seen on TV, the more likely people are to buy a ticket when the posters go up around town for a local show.
So piracy is okay, and so is what in the States would be called payola and plugola, where you pay to get your face on TV.
Yeah, I guess it is. It is a form of sort of visual payola. Yeah, traditional radio has suffered very badly, as you can imagine, if pretty much all music of all styles is available all the time. There's no need to wait for a DJ to play something on a radio station. But TV still plays a very, very important role in terms of keeping the money flowing, both from the biggest artist into TV and then back into the pocket of the artist when they go touring all across the country.
Now,
because TV truly is national, that's why.
Right.
TV is the one thing that everybody sees at the same time from one end of the country to another.
So when you look at the Russian pop charts, are they the same as the British and American and French and German pop charts, or are there a lot of actual native Russian acts at the top of the charts?
There's a huge difference. After the end of the Soviet Union through the 90s, there was obviously this knee-jerk rush towards everything Western, but gradually domestic material started to play catch-up. And if you look at the artists who make the most money touring now, or if you look at Russia's iTunes, because iTunes refused to even work in Russia until the beginning of this year, the most popular genre is something called chanson, which is not quite as French as it sounds, but it's a very slow, melancholy, middle-aged type of song that involves a lot of themes such as tricky marriage, prison terms, and other reasons to be generally sort of sad and grumpy. So the most popular style and the most popular names come very much from something that's completely domestic.
And who are some of those names?
There's a threesome that are sometimes referred to as the Holy Trinity. There are three names. There's Lieps is one, and Mikhailov are two guys who sing the style from a male point of view. But there's a woman, Yelena Vayenga, who's the main female representative. So Vayenga, Lieps, and Mikhailov. And in fact, Lieps was just refused a visa to the US because there's an assumption from the viewpoint of the US government that he's involved not only in large amounts of money in the entertainment business, but mafia money as well. So there are some parallels there with, you know, maybe Sinatra from years gone by.
Если друг оказался вдруг и не друг, и не враг, а так,
если сразу не разберешь, плох он или хорош. Парня в городе не рискни, не бросай одного его, пусть он в связке одной с тобой, там поймешь, кто такой.
So chanson is the name of the style, which...
Right, and there are radio stations dedicated to it. But it's the average chanson listener would be, at the risk of a gross cliche, probably a middle-aged provincial fan. So it's not something that appeals to anybody maybe under 30.
Or, you know, urbane city dwellers in Moscow and St. Petersburg.
It would. Unfortunately, it might be the object of some very unpleasant jokes in downtown Moscow.
Okay. David McFadyen with us on Soundcheck talking about music in Russia. His website is farfrommoscow.com. He's also a professor of musicology at UCLA. So back to the pop charts, though, if we look at the top of the pop charts right now, there are names like Lana Del Rey, you know, the American singer. Right. But then there's this Russian singer named Dima Bilan. What's going on here?
His great claim to fame is that he won the Eurovision Song Contest, which, although maybe not that familiar to American listeners, is arguably the greatest showcase for world pop music. It's traditionally a competition in which all the countries of Europe and surrounding nations take part. Each country sends one singer, and they all get one shot to present one song. Mm-hmm. And it produced ABBA, most famously. But since then, it's pretty hard to think of another winner of the Eurovision Song Contest who made a lifelong international career out of it. So Bilan is probably the best-known young male pop singer in Russia. And at the moment, he's probably best known because he just finished a season of The Voice, the talent show that we know here in the States, because it was syndicated around the world and it had exactly the same format, the same red chairs. And Bilan was one of the four judges. So he's been on TV, you know, a couple of times a week for the whole TV season.
I wonder how much he paid for that.
I don't know. That's a very good question.
Let's hear one of his songs. This is Dima Bilan in a song called Malish.
Где-то с тобою рассветы тебя уносят вместе. Не надо, укрою кого-то рядом. Будет, поверь мне, серьезней, чем мы с тобою. Сложно, не верю. Зачем мне все это? Слышишь, что мечты? Нам ни к чему, это только ты бред. Так пишут дети, что любовь будет вновь. Я знаю, улетаем небо под ногами. Удержи руками все, что было с нами.
That is Dima Bilan, big pop star in Russia with his song Malish. And we're speaking about Russian music in advance of the Olympics in Sochi with David McFadyen, editor of the music site Far From Moscow. David, as you get far from Moscow, you run into people who don't maybe look and sound the way most Americans think of Russians looking and sounding. You know, you go south towards the Caucasus Mountains, you go out into Central Asia. There are all kinds of other ethnicities and cultures and musical traditions at work. Is any of that still in play these days?
It is. Ironically, it's if we refer to it as world music, for example, just in terms of how it's marketed once it gets out of the country, it's one of the styles that actually has been easiest to promote in the West. If we were to ask a geographer, for example, whether Russia's in Europe or Asia, they'd probably say, well, if we're talking about the land, 80% of Russia is actually in Asia. Mm-hmm. So once you're out of the big cities and you head out towards the Pacific coast, as you, exactly as you said, you get out of a lot of European customs pretty quickly. And if we were just to draw up a list of the artists who've maybe physically played in Europe or further afield with the greatest success, who've been booked most often, it's actually people who represent some of the traditional folk music from those non-European areas. So way out through Siberia and further still to sort of, you know, over northern China and out to the coast.
So we've, you know, here in New York and throughout the States, we've had a chance to hear a lot of the Tuvan throat singers, you know, bands.
Exactly, yeah.
Hunhur Tu and Yatka and Ondar, right, and people like that. Do folks in Russia know who these bands are?
No, that's a good point. I would say that there's a strange sort of dichotomy that the people who maybe are enjoying the greatest festival success away from home are getting no primetime attention back in the places where they live.
And in the area around Sochi, what are the Olympians, what are the athletes likely to hear? Will it just be the kind of pop stuff? Will it be global, international pop? Is there some regional thing that they might, that we, via TV, might be exposed to?
I doubt it very much. I mean, certainly judging on the song with which you began. I mean, there's Allegrova, I think, she's either 60 or 61. She's what the Russians refer to as a people's artist, which is sort of an old Soviet title. It's like a ranking system. So the government's very keen to make Sochi a resort and make Sochi's culture something that's appealing to everybody everywhere. So I don't think they'll be playing it up as a unique cultural location. It'll be a way of branding the whole country.
Well, the 2014 Winter Olympics begin on February 7th in Sochi, Russia, and run through February 23rd. And you can keep up with the musical goings-on in that huge, sprawling country through David McFadyen's website called farfrommoscow.com. He's been on the line with us from UCLA. And David, it's been a lot of fun talking with you. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hooray for the Riff Raff. That's the name of a great band out of New Orleans. We'll talk with Alinda Lee Segarra, the Bronx native who's at the heart of the group, and we'll get a live performance from Hooray for the Riff Raff next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The New Orleans-based band Hooray for the Riff Raff is led by Alinda Lee Segarra, singer-songwriter who actually grew up about 10 miles from the WNYC studios here in New York. We first heard about the group back in 2012 when they released an album called Lookout Mama, an album that led NPR music critic Ann Powers to list them as her favorite new band of that year on Soundcheck's year-end survey. Now, Hooray for the Riff Raff is getting ready to release another album. This one's called Small Town Heroes, and today I'm joined by Alinda Lee Segarra and fiddler Yossi Perlstein to hear some of those songs. This one's called Blue Ridge Mountain. It's the band Hooray for the Riff Raff, live on Soundcheck.
Mountain, my head an overflowing fountain. Oh, my heart is a Blue Ridge Mountain. But I never, never knew, I never knew, never knew, never, never knew, never knew. Well, I woke up this morning and saw a new day dawning. Oh, I woke up this morning, but I never, never knew, I never knew, never knew, never, never knew, never knew.
Hooray for the Riff Raff, live on Soundcheck with their song Blue Ridge Mountain, which will be on their new album, Small Town Heroes, when it comes out in February. The members of the band here with us today, Alinda Lee Segarra, the singer, songwriter, and guitarist, and Yossi Perlstein playing the violin. Alinda, that's pretty convincing Blue Ridge Mountain stuff from a girl from the Bronx.
Yeah, I learned a lot about music when I was just traveling around in the North Carolina area, you know, in Appalachia. So I feel like it's definitely influenced me a lot. And definitely Yossi's fiddle playing, too. So,
well, I was going to say, a lot of the fiddle stuff sounds very traditional, almost as if you had just kind of like stolen it from some old folk dance tune or something. How did you, when you were traveling around the Carolinas, were you backpacking? Was this on the train? How were you doing that?
It was backpacking, I guess you could say. We had backpacks. a lot of hitchhiking around, just, you know, kind of trying to be Woody Guthrie as much as possible.
Right. And, of course, there's so much great stuff in that part of the, you know, the Piedmont blues, which are different from the Delta blues.
Yeah, for sure.
The story is that you started in the Bronx and you eventually wended your way to New Orleans.
Yeah.
Much of it via train, right? You did the hobo thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Well,
yeah.
And people are going to think, what's he saying hobo for? It's not the 1930s. But that term is still used by people who ride the rails.
Yeah, I would say people are still proud to call themselves that, mm-hmm. I would say.
What is that like? I mean, is it still like, you know, people think of 1930s films and stuff like that?
You definitely feel like you are outside of society, for sure. You're not very in touch with the average day of the average working person, I guess. When I was doing that, it was a number of years ago, so I didn't have a phone and I wasn't really, like, tapped into our, like, technological age, you know?
And that was by choice?
Yeah, I felt like at that point I was really trying to find myself, and I thought that was the best time to do it. You know, I didn't really have anything holding me down, so I thought that if I was going to take the opportunity, I should do it right then when I was really young, you know.
Heck of a way to see the country, too.
Yeah.
And when you got to New Orleans, what made that seem like the place to stop and settle down?
It's a really welcoming musical community. They're really welcoming to beginners also, I'd say. And there's a really big street music scene there.
Of
so
course,
it's a really great way to make some money if you're a musician. And you can also gig every night if you want.
We're speaking with Alinda Lee Segarra, the singer and songwriter behind the band Hooray for the Riff Raff. And they'll be back in New York in April for a show at the Knitting Factory on April 2nd and April 3rd for a performance at Lincoln Center as part of their songbook series,
which is right by my old high school.
Oh, did you go to LaGuardia?
I went to LaGuardia for a second, and then I went to Beacon.
Okay.
I hopped around schools as well, but I loved both of those schools. So.
All right. So you did a little bit of hopping around before you ever rode the rails.
Yeah.
The band is playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. You want to do the title track from the new record?
Sure. I'll do Small Town Heroes.
The album comes out on February 11th, but here's a live performance of the song Small Town Heroes by Hooray for the Riff Raff.
She was the queen, and she got all her drugs for free. She walked up to her daddy's door. He said, "You don't live here anymore." She wanted love, wanted love. Oh, but she just couldn't get enough. Enough. And my man, he wanders round. Oh, he lays all those young women down. And they said, "Darling, stay," but he says, "Baby, already on my way." They wanted love, wanted love. Oh, but they just couldn't get enough. Enough. Well, all these people and all these things, now what's the point in a wedding ring? 'Cause we might not be here when next year comes. Oh, I guess you gotta watch your back and carry a gun. You go. I threw you out where the cold winds blow. Are you in Vidalia with your no good mom? I just couldn't watch you stick it in your arm. You wanted love, wanted love. Oh, but I just couldn't give. From the boogie down to Bowling Green, I rode the night train to infinity. Well, I tempted fate and I acted smart. Oh, I grew some callus on my heart. I wanted love, wanted love. Just couldn't give enough, enough. Well, all these places, yeah, all these towns, now what's the point in settling down? 'Cause we might not be here when next year comes, so you better live it like you're on the run.
Well, that's called Small Town Heroes. It will be the title track of the next album by the band Hooray for the Riff Raff. The album comes out on February 11th. Here's a song called The Body Electric.
Said you're gonna shoot me down, put my body in the river. Shoot me down, put my body in the river while the whole world sings. Sing it like a song, the whole world sings like there's nothing going wrong. He shot her down, he put her body in the river. He covered her up, but I went to get her and I said, my girl, what happened to you now? I said, my girl, we gotta stop it somehow. Of September, like an old sad song. You heard it all before. Well, Delia's gone, but I'm settling the score.
That's called The Body Electric from the band Hooray for the Riffraff, represented here in our studio today by Alinda Lee Segarra on vocals and guitar and Yossi Perlstein on violin. So, Alinda, that's kind of a meta take on the murder ballad tradition, isn't it?
Yeah, it's my response, I guess, to the history of murder ballads. I feel like there's been a lot of really amazing ones in the past that told these really beautiful but tragic stories. But I felt like in more recent times, they've been used more as a, you know, like a really kind of something to get a rise out of the audience and be a little edgy. And I felt like we were really separating ourselves from the messages in those songs. And I felt like so often they were about killing women that I thought maybe a woman should speak up a little bit and be like, hey, that's me you're talking about.
So the narrator here is keeping score.
Yeah, yeah.
As she almost says, word for, you know, Delia's gone, but I'm settling the
yeah.
score.
I was just thinking a lot about reading the newspaper and seeing so much violence against women in our times and in our everyday life that I thought that our musical world should be a place that we could escape to and have some kind of safety for women as opposed to hurting them there, too.
and a little agency as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. The band Hooray for the Riffraff has the new album coming out on February 11th called Small Town Heroes. Alinda, Yossi, thank you so much for playing for us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, an Australian asthma attack, an American guitar shredder, and the artist formerly known as Smog. They're all up next in another installment of our Pick 3 series on Soundcheck.
3, that's a magic number. Yes, 3, it is. It's the magic number.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Time now for another installment of our occasional feature that we call Pick 3, where we ask a special guest to share a playlist of 3 favorite tracks. And joining us on the line is Mark Wheat, on-air host at The Current, the excellent alternative music station from Minnesota Public Radio. Hey, Mark, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, John. Happy New Year to everyone.
So before we get to some stuff coming out in the new year, was there something at the end of last year that caught your ear?
Yeah, I have kind of a music head tradition over the holidays. I read up on what all the other media have been saying and about the year and looking back to see if there's anything I missed. And Mojo magazine, which I think is the only music magazine left on the planet, or is actually my favorite still, had this album by Bill Callahan as their number one album, above the Bowie and the Daft Punk and the Arcade Fire and all the rest. So I had missed it, and I went back to it, and I found this song. In fact, it's the lead-off song of the album, Dream River, and he just totally won me over again. I used to like his stuff when he was known as Smog, but I kind of lost contact with the stuff he's been doing over the last few years, but this has totally made me a believer again as a lyric guy, as I like to say. This song just stands out because it does the crazy thing of making the very, very, very normal seem absolutely bizarre and wonderful. And in the space of a 3 or 4 minute song, that always captures me. So Bill Callahan's Dream River is the album, and the song Sing has been on my rotation ever since the end of the year.
Drinking while sleeping, strangers unknowingly keep me company. In the hotel bar, looking out a window that isn't there, looking at the carpet and the chairs, well, the only words I said today are beer and thank you.
That is Bill Callahan, who for years recorded under the name Smog, but in recent years has been recording under his own name. The Sing comes from his 2013 record called Dream River, and that's on Mark Wheat's playlist for us today on our Pick 3 segment. Mark, I love the line, "The only words I've said today are beer and
yep.
thank you."
Yep.
And then he proceeds to say, "Beer."
Beer.
Thank you.
I know it kind of, as a bit of a loner myself, I can say that, you know, sometimes you find that sweet bit of sadness in realizing that you can go a whole day and not say any words, and I think that captures just the essence of that he's alone and where do you go with that?
Yeah. And man, does he have the voice for that sort of thing.
I know.
So so that came out in 2013, but
yep,
you're looking ahead as well, right?
Always trying to do that, and I didn't think we'd be looking ahead so quickly to this young lady's new album. She's been courageously busy, if that's a great way of putting it. Her name is Annie Clark. She works under the name Saint Vincent, and had a pretty good career going for herself under that name. We played her a lot on The Current, and I started to think maybe she's going to, you know, step up to the next level. And then she did something, a twist in her career, which I personally loved as a big fan of David Byrne.
Mm-hmm.
She got together to make an album with him called Love This Giant, and they went on tour, and it was so successful that they just kept going on tour. I saw her when they saw them when they played the Twin Cities, and it was just a magical show. They played some of their own music and some Talking Heads tracks, and she totally worked for me, sharing the stage with a giant like David. So she's got a brand new album just around the corner coming out, I think, next month. And the first song from it is called Birth in Reverse. And I love the... Again, she has some lines in there that speak about how ordinary life is. But she does it in a way that makes you think there's a lot more going on to this story.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to be touring on her own in a lot of big venues, and it's going to be interesting to see whether she can pull it off on her own and if people get behind her as a solo artist under the name St. Vincent. But this is a good start, Birth in Reverse from Annie Clark, a.k.a. St. Vincent.
Oh, what an ordinary day.
Called Birth in Reverse from St. Vincent, real name Annie Clark. She is a singer, songwriter. She is also, Mark Wheat, a pretty astonishing guitarist.
Yes, John, she's one of the only women I've ever heard referred to as a shredder. And she takes that on. And it's interesting, our friends at National Public Radio did a nice interview with her recently, and she said that she kind of has that, you know, it's kind of an oak to bear when you're considered a guitar shredder, and she tries to steer clear of the kind of stereotypical rock cliches on the guitar, and actually does a lot of work, I think, processing it, so it sometimes doesn't even sound like a guitar, as they pointed out in that interview.
Well, and you know, Soundcheck listeners, if you go to soundcheck.org and type in St. Vincent, you'll find at least one session that she did here in the studio where at certain moments, you know, it's just her and her guitar and her devices and looping pedals and stuff. And it just, at certain points, doesn't sound like a guitar at all anymore.
Right. Yeah, which is beautiful.
We're speaking with Mark Wheat, on-air host at The Current, the alternative music station from Minnesota Public Radio. He's on the line with us from Minneapolis and sharing a Pick 3 playlist. The St. Vincent album, which is also going to be called simply St. Vincent, is due out in late February, February 25th.
Yep.
Which I believe is the day that I have booked Courtney Barnett to play here in our studio on Soundcheck. And she's on your Pick 3, too.
That's a good pick, John. She's actually been picked by the BBC as one of the artists to watch in 2014. They're another of my bellwether tastemakers that I always look to. And so it looks like she's got a good start to the year. From Australia, too, which, bizarrely enough, seems to be a good start for you as well in music circles. Last year, especially, we played a lot of artists from Australia and New Zealand, of course, with the big Lord explosion. Everyone was paying attention to what else was coming out of Down Under. But Courtney is really, I think, an aberration. She's not kind of a psychedelic electronic band like the Tame Impalas or the Jaguar Ma that's coming out of Australia, and she's not another Lord. She has a quirkiness which will remind listeners, I think, of someone like Joanna Newsom or maybe Tao from the Get Down, Stay Down. She has that kind of quirkiness to her. But I think what won me over in this particular song is that she captures the strange, I say strange in the best possible sense of the word, Australian comedic sense. She has a lot of humor underlying that. And again, great lyricism. The story is about her going out into the garden and having basically not being able to breathe, which sounds like a horror story, but the way she tells it, it's almost like she's reading a children's story to kids.
And in addition, again, like St. Vincent, in addition to being a fine lyricist and songwriter, also a pretty impressive guitarist, especially if you listen to what's going on in the back of this song. It's called Avant Gardener from Courtney Barnett from Australia, and we pick up the story when she is in the middle of having her major asthma attack.
Shaky, my knees are weak. I can't seem to stand on my own two feet. I'm breathing, but I'm wheezing. Feel like I'm emphysemin. My throat feels like a funnel filled with Weet-Bix and kerosene. And oh no, next thing I know, they call up Triple O. I'd rather die than owe the hospital till I get old. I get adrenaline straight to the heart.
From Australia, Courtney Barnett with Avant Gardener. And Mark Wheat, we forgot the best part, the name of her band.
Oh, now you're going to surprise me. What's the name of a band?
The Courtney Barnetts.
Oh, right. See, that's perfect as well. Yeah, she's got a way with titles and everything. A Sea of Split Peas is the title of the two EPs, which I love as well. So yeah, we're going to hear a lot more about her.
Also a very droll video that accompanies this song that you can find online. Mark Wheat sharing a Pick 3 playlist with us. He's on-air host at The Current, the alternative music station in Minneapolis, Minnesota Public Radio. In addition, though, Mark, you and I share another love, and that is soccer.
So, I wondered if you were going to bring that up.
So you've started a soccer blog at thecurrent.org, which is called On the Ball with Mark Wheat. So,
which is another dream come true, because when I was a kid watching soccer in England, there was a show called On the Ball every Saturday, which kept you up to date with what was happening. And so I didn't tell the people at NPR that when they picked the title, so they picked it, and I'm just honored to do it. I always knew there was a connection between soccer and music. We try to make that connection at the end of every blog, and there's some wonderful connections coming out that I didn't know, which is awesome. The English have always had that culturally, that connection between soccer and music.
You did one blog post about the team from Hull
yeah.
City, and you know, who are sort of like in the middle of the top league, the English Premier League, to people's surprise, because they were not expected to do that well. What kind of music connection were you able to make? I mean, it seems like each of your blog posts ends with a song that is somehow germane to what you were doing. So what song represents Hull City?
Well, their new owner that they have, a lot of the British teams are having a lot of foreign investors come in, and the new owner of the team has rebranded the team, and he wants to call them the Tigers, Hull Tigers, which was always their nickname, but was always played down. A lot of the clubs don't make a big deal of branding themselves as anything else other than their name. And a lot of supporters think of it as Hull City. What more could you want? So the Tigers has been accentuated. They do play in black and amber stripes. And so It was a chance for me to stretch a little bit and make a connection to one of my favorite glam pop hits from the late 70s by a band called Mud, which was called Tiger Feet. And they have a great video on the web that you can find showing you how to do the dance that went with Tiger Feet. And when we were kids, that was one of our favorite dances to do. So
did you start this whole blog just to have an excuse to resurrect Mud?
Yes. You've seen right through me, John.
You can check out Mark's On the Ball blog. It's part of thecurrent.org. Mark's been sharing a Pick 3 playlist with us on Soundcheck today. Mark, good to talk to you again.
Great to be back on the show, John. Thank you very much indeed.
That is Tiger Feet by the glam rock group called Mud. Tomorrow on Soundcheck, Cynthia Weil and Barry Mann, the husband and wife songwriting team behind hits like You've Lost That Lovin' Feelin' and We've Gotta Get Out of This Place. Their story is told alongside that of another songwriting duo, Carole King and Jerry Goffin, in the new Broadway musical, Beautiful. Plus a review of the new Bruce Springsteen album, High Hopes, which comes out officially tomorrow, and a performance by Jake Bugg, a much-buzzed-about English musician who worked with super producer Rick Rubin on his new album, all at the tender age of 19. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.